moments ago, my friends, I called Secretary Handel. No, please. I commended her on a hard-fought race and on her victory this evening.
The depression that Democrats now face, and they're also torn between what kind of candidate they should run in the midterms, what kind of issues they should run on. Instead of having a clearer map for the midterms, there's now just a whole lot of confusion for the Democratic Party.
Well, they can't figure it out. I can't wonder why. You got this guy who's supposedly so unpopular. Donald Trump's so unpopular. With their analysis, you should have been able to win both special elections. Let's keep the name play on words going handily. Karen Handel beats Pajama Boy, Joel Ossoff. And I'm going to say this before we get to Pat Buchanan. I also think there's another factoid that helped her win against Ossoff. Bernard in Pennsylvania. We got Pat on the line. We got to go to Bernard really quickly because Pat will love this answer. Bernard, go ahead. What's the one fact that a lot of those Georgia voters didn't like about old Pajama Boy? Go ahead.
Well, he was bragging that he lives with his girlfriend and she had her husband on stage. And I think marriage matters. It matters to me. So that's my comment, and thank you for taking my call.
Oh, Bernard, that is hilarious. I love how you said, well, I couldn't live in my home district. I had to help Alicia with her medical studies. You're shacking up for 12 years, dude. Shacking up for 12 years. You couldn't put a ring on her finger for 12 years? Most people don't like that. Fathers don't like that. He lived with her for 12 years.
But she's married?
No, Handel's married with her husband on stage.
Oh, Handel's
Karen
married. Okay.
Raymond just walks in late and screws up the whole segment.
No.
Thanks for getting me off track,
I'm
Raymond.
Listening to
Appreciate
this.
It.
I'm telling you how it's playing to the average listener of whom I am.
He walks in last, saunters in for the second time last minute. And Karen Handel on stage, married woman. You know, remember she was the whistleblower on the, well, did a little Planned Parenthood deal, and she got pulled away from the Susan Komen Foundation. And she revealed what was going on with the Susan Komen and Planned Parenthood. She left that, the Susan Komen Foundation, and she started learning about politics. Pat Buchanan joins us now. I'm absolutely thrilled. I love on a day like today when Pat Buchanan's with us. His new book, Nixon's White House Wars, The Battles That Made and Broke a President. Divided America forever. Pat, my friend, I guess that old Trump isn't so unpopular after all down there in Georgia.
Yeah, and the social issues were turned up.
I love that.
Bring it back, you know, the culture war.
Yeah.
But you're right. You're exactly right. I mean, that was astonishing when that fella, Joe, what's his name, got 48% and against, you know, half a dozen or more Republicans, and then he got about the same vote against the single woman there, down there, the married woman, I should say, Karen Handel. I think it's a real sign that the Republican Party can really pull it together. And secondly, the old idea that Donald Trump at the top of the party is going to drag down Republican candidates simply did not hold. But I think what you said earlier, this is going to cause some real thinking inside the Democratic Party, whether to go with the, you know, with the Bernie strategy of, you know, just burn, baby, burn, or whether we're going to try to play Republican or moderate Republican in the South.
I think that the left, some of the commentators on the left, were tweeting last night that this should teach us a lesson. That Sally Cohn gal who's on occasionally on TV, she's like Rachel Maddow's doppelganger. I mean, the two of them agree on pretty much everything. But they're both fun. They can do a good job for their side of the issue. But her point was that the Democrats need to learn from this. Don't run someone who's half-baked. You need to go left. You can't have someone who tries to straddle some of these issues as this Ossoff, they claim, did. I mean, I kind of just saw him as a warmed-over, younger male version of Nancy Pelosi without any of the experience. I mean, I don't think he was all that popular. He also couldn't shave for his concession speech. He had a terrible 5 o'clock shadow, which just looked sloppy. I thought he looked sloppy. But
well,
that's a question for the Democrats.
I don't understand why they're in that argument, but I'm not sure it's right for them. I mean, if we run Republicans in New England, who are, you know, Texas red hots, I don't think they
don't
would
win.
Do that well. But clearly, the kid just basically, I shouldn't call him a kid, 30 years old, but he basically offered sort of bland, you know, and but when you get 48% and you can't push it over the top in a general election, and 30, what is it, how many millions of dollars did they pump into that? I mean, that raises a real question about, you know, the spending and these ads, what do they really mean? But the turnout apparently also, Laura, was terrific, which suggests that Republicans realized the stakes involved also, and they really came out after that, and really came out and pulled this thing out from behind. So I think it's quite heartening for the Republicans and for Trump.
I also think it's interesting because you saw the coalition of Republican voices come together. Chamber of Commerce, the populist conservatives came out and supported Handel. The social conservatives came out and supported Handel. It seems like all the different wings of the party all came together. They saw how important this was, that this could light a fire for the Democrats. Ditto in the South Carolina race that didn't get as much attention. But I posited this question earlier, Pat, that if Karen Handel had actually done more to channel Trump's views on critical issues, which probably the Chamber of Commerce wouldn't have liked, of course, but if she had campaigned with Trump, like one or two real big campaign appearances, I think she would have won by more than 3.5 percentage points. I think she kind of played it a little cutesy with Trump. I think she could have won bigger in that district, frankly.
I think Trump's immigration issue, border security issue,
law and order,
I think are extremely strong in the idea of jobs, and frankly, the market's been going gangbusters. I tend to agree with you. If she were much tougher, I think she might have done inspired more folks. And but gee, the tree, you can't knock that
turnout. Yeah,
down
can't
there,
do
extraordinary.
It. No, it was stunning, and I think now the question moves to Washington, D.C., where Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, in my view, along with the other usual suspects, the John McCains, the Jeff Flakes, the Ben Sasse, the Jason Chaffetz, they all seem to be playing another game, which is slow walk legislation. Well, they reveal like every day, well, we're closer. Oh, we might have this. We might have movement on this. But it's a slow walk to legislative success. And it feels to me like this isn't an accident, that they really do not want to deliver big legislative wins to the president at this point in time, when he has the special counsel breathing down his neck. He has some struggles in some polls. We don't know if they're accurate or not. But it seems like the president needs to barnstorm this country and put the pressure on Congress to push this agenda through. The populist conservative agenda must be pushed through in order for the Republicans to go into 2018 really strong.
You know, I agree with you, but I do think this is deliberate on the part of McConnell and Ryan, I believe. I mean, really, I agree. If we see him out there all the time, especially Ryan out there talking, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And if there's no real production here by the time you get past the end of this session and into the new year, I think they're going to have real problems. Now, Republicans have won 5 of these elections. You know, these elections since Trump won his victory, all 5 of them. But that was a pretty close call down there in South Carolina. If the Democrats had put a few of those millions down there, they might have won that seat. And while Republicans have won, they haven't been by startling margins. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. If there's no real production here by the time you get to 2018,
trouble,
they could have a problem. But their ace in the hole is the lady from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you tell, apparently you go many districts in this country, if you tell them, look, you really want Nancy Pelosi in control of the House and nothing done on jobs or the economy for the next 2 years, and them all, you know, berating Trump, you want that the next 2 years? I think they've got a good case. Frankly, if I were the Democrats, I mean, I think the Democrats ought to take a hard look at whether they really want to be led into the 2018 elections, you know, by a lady who's approaching 80 years old and is deeply controversial.
Yeah, and that gives the Republicans such a great opening. But you're
sure,
right, it's
I mean,
a slow
this
walk.
This is what you're voting for.
Right, you're voting
and
for this.
The Democrats can't say you're not.
Right, but it's what's really important is that the Republicans on the Hill are working hand in glove with the president's team. And so it looks like all for one, one for all. We're going to not agree on everything. You have the votes for what you have the votes for. I mean, you're not going to have the votes for certain. You're not going to have a full, clean repeal. That's just not going to happen. So what can we pass? Let's get it passed. You've got to start. I say this every day until I'm blue in the face. I'm going to keep saying it. You have to put points on the board. And you have to have happy voters going into 2018 and 2020. We need happy voters. We've had enough fighting. We've had all these arguments. Rancor. Trump should be the happy warrior for economic renewal and a stronger America on the home front. I just think that's a winner for Democrats and Republicans.
Well, there's a couple of points here. The media in town, the media and the cable news networks
Horrible.
And all the rest of it, they simply are not going to let go of this, you know, Russia investigation,
right.
all of this, and who's got a lawyer and who doesn't have a lawyer. But secondly, I do think McConnell, I see what he's doing. He's simply going to, we're going to get a bill through and we're going to get that thing into conference and let them work it out. And if they can come out with a bill that one, both houses can pass, okay, if not, not. And so I think that's why he's getting through, you know, this surprise package which they're going to produce and apparently vote on in a couple of weeks so that they get it into conference and get the folks working on it and maybe come out with something upon which they can find some kind of consensus vote and pass.
And I think what the challenge is for the president and for his team, Pat, going into the communications, we're going to talk to Sean Spicer coming up on the show, on the communications front, they have actually a lot of good stories to tell, even without Congress. But for some reason, the coordination isn't there. And I remember in the Reagan years, when you all would come out with anything on the domestic front, the relevant agencies in the cabinet departments that had purview over that issue would amplify the message with their own initiative, their own messaging. But it was the – remember, Pat, it was the press secretary at HHS or the press secretary at Commerce. They were all on the same page. And here it's just like there's one day for infrastructure. There's one day for the tech summit. There's one – but then it's just off in the ether.
You know, it's what we used to do when I was communications director. You say, look, when is the contra vote coming up? When do you think it's going to be? 5 weeks? Okay, schedule it for now. Okay, let's get all the guys in the various departments. They're writing, they're speaking on this. And you're writing speeches for them, and you're writing op-ed for them, and you're doing various things in the communications realm, building up, and we say, okay, we call the Gipper in to deliver the final punch 2 days before the vote. And then you see if you can take it over the top. And after about three or four of these, I mean, we shifted from not getting humanitarian aid to, I think we got $100 million in military aid or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a long process working on the guys. And, of course, in those days you had the boll weevils, these Democrats from the South and elsewhere, who were really amenable to a strong argument on national security.
Well, and I think, you know, back then the existential threat was the Soviet Union and the Soviet
sure.
influence expanding in our hemisphere, and yet I think today we still have the neoconservatives. They're chomping at the bit to get us into Syria. And I saw that news the other day, Pat, about how we shoot down the Syrian Air Force jet, and Russia now says, okay, well, guess what? Game's on. That's a dangerous deal.
Well, Russia, I mean, that seemed to me exactly right. Look, what the story there is, the truth is the Americans – and it's in our allies are winning the war against ISIS in Raqqa and Mosul both, and we're moving to victory there. However, in the war in Syria, the Syrian regime and army backed by Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah and the Shia militias, they have won their war. So what are we going to do now? Who inherits the earth, if you will? Who inherits the terrain surrendered by ISIS? If we try to get into the sort of a follow-on conflict, I think we're going to be in a hellish mess with too few allies, and I think a war that the American people don't want, that they don't know is coming. So I think, and there's a real dispute, I think, inside the government between the Pentagon and the CIA about this, you know, impending confrontation with Iranians and Russians and Syrians.
Yeah, and I just every time you ask the American people what they think about this. They don't want any part of it. They don't want any part of it.
It's exactly right. That is really the real peril, I think, of the Trump presidency, is the possibility he could be sucked into a war of all against all right in Syria.
No, that would be a bloodbath. Pat Buchanan, a great analysis. Love it. I mean, it's very interesting. But the Republicans have so much work to do, but there's real hope. There's real hope. They don't get down in the mouth, man. This is good. This is good stuff. Happy warriors. Pat Buchanan, great to talk to you. We'll take a break.
The Laura Ingraham Show.